Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
We have talked about it endlessly over the last decade or so, and we've accomplished close to zip.
We know enough about our climate problem to know that it's serious and that we need to get started right away.
What we're seeing right now is a clear loading of the weather dice.
Our planet is really sending distress signals, and we need to act. We need to cut greenhouse gas emissions dramatically and quickly.
Distress signals? That's World Meteorological Organization's Claire Nullis talking about the dramatic changes we saw in the globe in 2016, which the EU has now confirmed as the third consecutive warmest year on record globally. Welcome to ClimateCast, everybody. I'm NPR Chief Meteorologist Paul Huttner. You know, our planet did something in 2016 that it has never done before since at least 1880. Planet Earth set the record for the warmest year globally for the third straight year. Global temperatures last year reached 1.3 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial times. That's what the data shows from the EU's Copernicus Climate Change Service. The Earth, it says, is on the edge. And, you know, many scientists I talked to were stunned by the pace of climate change last year. Coral reefs showed unprecedented bleaching as waters warmed. The Arctic showed incredible warmth, temperatures running 10 to 35 degrees warmer than average. And sea ice in the Arctic and even the Antarctic showed unprecedented losses at the same time. That's something we haven't seen before. So what's going on here? Is this a blip on the longer-term climate change radar? Or was 2016 more of a step change in the stairway of our planet's warming trend? And I'm curious what you think about this. I want to know, what about 2016 stands out to you with our weather, with the climate around the globe? How do you perceive and process these global changes we're seeing, even if they're not happening in your backyard? Please call me and tell me what you paid attention to last year. 651-227-6000 is the number to call, or you can call me toll-free at 800-242-2828. Angela Fritz is with the Washington Post's very popular Capital Weather Gang, and she joins me this morning from Washington, D.C. Angela, welcome to ClimateCast.
Hi, Paul.
Good to talk to you again. Let's start with the raw numbers. We've known that 2016 was likely on pace to be the next new warmest year on record. The EU confirms that. NOAA and NASA likely to chime in later this week. What's your perspective at Capital Weather Gang on the fact of three consecutive warmest years on record globally?
Well, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is, well, there is no pause, right? This is something that skeptics or deniers have been talking about for the past maybe 5 to 10 years, that there's this great pause in global warming, and where's the global warming? It, you know, this is what happens when you combine human emission activity with natural cycles. You get these kind of, you know, ebbs and flows of global warming, and now we've had 3 years in a row. And so, no, there is no pause. That's the first thing that comes to mind. For me.
Well, and we, you know, we're pretty careful, I think you and I and a lot of people in this business, we don't really pay too much heed to 1 year in the longer term record. But you make a good point there. That's not only three consecutive warmest years on record. If we look back to 2010, it's pretty eye-opening. We've actually had the five hottest years globally, mm-hmm. starting with 2010. So, you know, you write for Capital Weather Gang. You talk to a lot of climate scientists. How are the climate scientists you interact with assessing this highly unlikely string of warmest years?
I mean, yeah, it is highly unlikely. It's highly unlikely. They're telling me that this is due to natural fluctuations. You know, they're looking at this and they're saying there has to be something extra here on top of our natural cycles in order to produce 3 years in a row. And like you said, five since 2010, mm-hmm. To get to the point that we are right now. And we're seeing, I think that we're seeing the impacts of this. They might be subtle and they might be hard to kind of tease out, but I think that myself, the other climate scientists that I speak with, and even, you know, your listeners are seeing the effects of this.
Angela Fritz is with us. She's with the Capital Weather Gang in Washington, D.C., with the Washington Post. And she and her crew write about climate and weather. Very popular website. You may have heard of it. If not, check it out. Angela, let's start with some of the ground truth, the most observable global impacts of last year. The Arctic and sea ice. How often did Capital Weather Gang write about that in the past year?
I mean, it's just been kind of phenomenal. Ourselves and our colleagues, Chris Mooney over at the Energy and Environment blog, mm-hmm. we have been watching the Arctic sea ice story. It is really one of the most important impacts that we can follow of climate change, and also the Antarctic story. You know, yeah. for a long time, we have been talking about the Antarctic as this anomaly, the Antarctic ground ice and sea ice. You know, what was it doing? It wasn't reducing like people thought that it should under global warming. But now we're finally seeing that kind of transition, and that is a scary prospect.
It is. In fact, some of the charts we're seeing for total ice globally are pretty astounding this year. And I'm sure you've read some of the papers that maybe there's a lag as much as 200 years in the thermohaline, the ocean currents that mean the Antarctic responds a little more slowly to climate changes. What do you make of the big changes we saw, a big drop in Antarctic ice this year?
Well, it's very concerning, and I don't think that it comes as much as a surprise to, you know, our climate scientists that we talk to. I think that they've been kind of saying this for years that, you know, yes, we might not see things happen on a year-to-year basis, but, you know, these people look at the long term, and they look at what has happened in the past. I always like to look back to the way that climate has changed in the past, and seeing what has happened under natural climate change cycles, mm-hmm. you know, and then,
of course.
And now we look at how much fossil fuel has been released into the atmosphere and the rate of that. And you compare those two things and you're like, this cannot be good. You know, this cannot, the effects that we saw naturally hundreds of thousands of years ago, could be doubled or tripled under this this rate, the scenario of fossil fuel emission.
Well, and the time frame is shrinking also. I mean, people make the point, correctly so, that climates have changed in the past. We know that about Earth. But that's exactly the reason scientists are so concerned now, is because every time we've had one of those changes, we've also seen that increase in global CO2. So we're now doing what sometimes took thousands or even millions of years to happen. We're doing it in 100 years. We're compressing it. And the rate of change is so much more quick, as you point out.
Yeah. And you know, to speak in actual numbers, you know, because I, you know, your listeners are very critical and they listen carefully to these things. Let's talk about the Paleo-Eocene Thermal Maximum.
Yes, please. The
right?
PETM.
The PETM is what I always look back to. That was an extreme climate change event. It happened, however, over hundreds of thousands of years, perhaps 200,000 years is what they're thinking. And it was an extreme event. It was so extreme that it caused a new geologic, you know, era. Mm-hmm. It was very intense. 2 billion metric tons of carbon per year were released into the atmosphere during the PETM. Right now, we are releasing, 30 billion metric tons of
mm-hmm.
carbon?
Right.
And so just to compare those two numbers, it's so extreme. And yes, perhaps back then, we ecosystems were able to adapt eventually. Can they adapt at this rate? It's you know, that's something that's still unclear. And I think that we're starting to see some of those effects. You know, we've seen a lot of reports on the polar bear ecosystem recently because of the Arctic ice dwindling. And that could be one of our big ecosystem losses, you know,
sure.
in the next couple of decades.
Well, and we make the point on this show quite often, Angela, that it's the human ecosystem that may be the most challenging to adapt.
Mm-hmm.
We've built our cities under climate assumptions over the last several hundred years that may no longer exist in 50 or 100 years. So it's hard to move Miami when sea level rises, you know, 3 or 4 feet in the next 100 years or so. We are with Angela
Absolutely.
Fritz. She's with the Capital Weather Gang in Washington, D.C. We're talking about the crazy climate year that was 2016 and wondering what you think about it, too. Let's take a call. Matt from Finland. How is it up north this morning? Good morning.
It's a bit cold up here. It's a bit cold. I mean, we had colder, I think, a week or 10 days ago there. But, the thing I've been noticing is that we seem to be having more frequent spring ice storms. And I that's my observation. I don't know if it's empirically true, so I'd be interested to hear your take on that.
Sure.
But what seems to be happening is we get big snowstorms. We've always got late spring snowstorms up here sometime in, you know, late March, early April. Or actually, I'm sorry, more like late April. Mm-hmm. Anyway, depends. Sometime in April. And we'll get a late snowstorm, but it'll be, you know, in many years it's just powder, but then recently it seems like it's warmer at that time. And so then we get icing on the trees and just like ice that builds up on everything, and then it starts snapping trees and
sure.
It's seeming to take a big toll starting to have a toll on the forest to some degree with just a lot of damage to trees. But so I'd be interested to hear what your thoughts are on that.
All right. Great question, Matt. And I can answer part of that for you. The metrics are there. We are seeing observably more winter rain and winter ice in Minnesota as precip type starts to change as it's warmer when these systems come through. So more rain and ice in winter in what used to be snow. That's an observable measured trend in Minnesota. But Angela, it brings up a great larger point about changes in the hydrologic cycle. We're seeing those in the United States and around the globe as well, aren't we?
Right. And the growing season and you know, basically what your caller is describing is Oklahoma weather, right?
Yes.
Minnesota weather is what Oklahoma had, you know, 50, 60 years ago. That area is kind of known for its ice storms. There's kind of a band across the middle of the U.S.
The ice belt.
The Ohio Valley, that area. And that's all shifting north, just like the growing season is getting warmer. We're seeing all of these impacts that relate very clearly to global warming.
Angela, let's talk about the wider globe a little bit. This really stunned a lot of scientists, I think, this year, the widespread coral reef bleaching events. I saw 60 to 80% loss in parts of the Great Barrier Reef. And when one of the seven great natural wonders of the world sees that kind of change, you know, is that a distress signal that many climate scientists are looking at?
Yeah, and I think that, while things like does climate change impact hurricanes or floods or tornadoes? While those things may still be something that climate scientists are studying, we know that sea surface temperatures, that ocean temperatures are getting warmer, that the chemistry of the oceans are changing because of that, and that sea levels are rising. And those, at the very least, those things are very directly attributed to global warming.
Right. And let's talk about that a little bit. The effects of climate change. There are certain things climate scientists have a high degree of confidence in. Sea level rises, more frequent extreme rainfall events, things like that. Mm-hmm. How do we parse out the effects that are highly likely attributable to climate change from those that maybe we still need more science on?
It's a tough question because every time we have a big event, people want to say, well, you know, was that climate change? I mean, and the answer is, you know, everything in the weather, it has now a fingerprint, even if just a small one, of climate change, because weather is the day-to-day fluctuations on top of this very long span of climate time, right? And so as our climate changes, as temperatures go up, you know, our weather is going to change along with it. And so that's just kind of, you know, not even from, you know, a physical standpoint, but just from a statistical standpoint, you know, that's what we're expecting. Now, you know, can I say that a certain tornado outbreak was due to climate change? No, but we know that the fingerprints are all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of the things that we're talking about. And the question, maybe the most important question here is how much is this costing? You know, it is costing us more money to repair and to recover from these things because of perhaps, you know, slight incremental fractional changes in the weather intensity.
Right. And we've talked about that, too, the infrastructure costs. When you get places like Florida where they're spending $480 million
right.
in South Miami for a series of pumps to keep water out of the streets on sunny days, those kind of costs are increasing dramatically. The insurance industry is locked in on this. They're starting to change their catastrophic loss models. So big business in many ways sort of gets these changes.
Right. And listen, I am not one of these people that says, oh, you know, we're not going to be able to deal with this. It's going to be catastrophic. We will be able to engineer our way. We are so fortunate to live in a country that has brilliant engineers and has the capability to do this. But at what cost? You know, and if we're talking about financial crisis and, you know, just financial instability in this country, that is what we should be paying attention to. It is going to be tremendously expensive to deal with this.
Yep, and that is for sure. We're seeing that on paper. Let's take another phone call. Steve in Minneapolis, good morning. What's your question this morning?
Hey, Paul, thanks a lot for picking up my call.
Absolutely.
I'm a system scientist, and so we look at things through the macroscope instead of the microscope.
Mm-hmm.
And something I've thought about climate change for a long time, kind of a perspective, is that global warming is actually kind of an artifact to what's really happening, and that's that we're not cooling. And that, it sounds simple, but that perception really shifts a lot of thinking and even research. I'm much more interested in how we measure that heat, like the water holding capacity of that Christmas storm that came through was mm-hmm. amazing, or the temperatures at the poles being 35 to 50 degrees warmer. You would predict that underneath an analysis looking at not cooling. And just one final thing is, like, if I'm warming, that's not a bad thing. But if I'm not cooling, that's not a good thing at all.
Well, and that's a good point. Thanks for the call very much, Steve. Angela, the Arctic, he mentions the Arctic. It's sort of the Earth's refrigerator. And if it's not cold at the North Pole, it starts to affect weather patterns around the globe, doesn't it?
It does. And at least the weather patterns that we've become familiar with and the weather patterns that, you know, our human ecosystem has developed in, they will change because we are lacking that ice. And it's a positive feedback. And when we talk about positive feedbacks, of course, we don't mean good feedbacks. We mean feedbacks that build on each other over and over and over again. The ice melts. The Arctic gets warmer, which melts more ice, which warms the Arctic. It's one of these cycles that is very, very hard to break. Go ahead.
Yeah, let's shift gears a bit to climate policy. Not that there's much going on where you are in Washington, D.C.
No.
this week, right? But the hearing with Secretary of State nominee Rex Tillerson, it looks like we may be on the verge, Marco Rubio aside, we'll see, of putting the former CEO of one of the world's biggest oil companies at the head of U.S. foreign policy. What's the talk at Capitol Weather Gang and in the Washington Post newsroom in general about Rex Tillerson's nomination and the potential atmospheric impacts of that?
Yeah, I think it is very interesting because, you know, the no government experience aside, these are all people Donald Trump has nominated a crew of climate skeptics at the least and climate deniers at the worst. To help run his government. And Tillerson is obviously falls into that category to some extent. He did, I don't know if you listened yesterday, but he did admit that climate change was happening, although he was pretty foggy on the details. He didn't really dig into it a lot.
Right.
So it's one of these things where we're not really going to know until policies start coming down or policies start getting, you know, displaced and completely written off the books entirely.
And I think you're right. There's a lot we don't know. I mean, I write a lot about renewables and the solar energy boom, you know, production jobs, those kind of things. China, I see an announcement. They just announced they will invest $361 billion mm-hmm. and create 13 million new jobs in renewable energy by 2020. What's your sense and the sense there at the Post? Will a president-elect Trump administration that campaigned on jobs take that lying down from China?
Well, there are two things about renewable energy that I hope a business-savvy administration would see. And the first is that it does mean jobs. You know, if this administration wants to bring jobs back to this country, that would be one way to do it. The other thing that I hope that they will see is that it is going to be more and more expensive to try and dig fossil fuels out of the earth. You know, there aren't going to be that many left.
Yeah.
And so renewables, and we're already seeing this, if you factor in all of the subsidies and all of the benefits of renewables, solar energy in particular, wind, are becoming more cost effective than fossil fuels. And from a business, from a plain business and money perspective, mm-hmm. that should be something that looks appealing to a business-savvy administration.
Yeah, and I think, too, we're seeing this energy transition take place. It's sort of a fact of technology and science as we go forward. And as I've said, I think the train has sort of left the station and is gaining steam on renewables. So we'll see where that goes in the next few years. You know, a lot of people after this election, Angela, who follow climate change, seem a little bummed out at times about the potential policy changes ahead. What about your readers there and the way folks are reacting? Are they concerned? Are they hopeful? What kind of feedback are you getting these days?
Our feedback from our readers, as well as the feedback that we have kind of collected from some of our sources, is one of, you know, deep concern. They tend to look back to the George W. Bush administration and some of the sweeping policy changes that were made there, some of the, you know, muzzling of climate scientists and reports, and they're concerned about that in particular. But at the same time, you know, people have experienced that. They know what those tactics are, those tacks can be. And so, you know, they're thinking, well, at least we've dealt with this before. But there is a lot of concern just widespread across our readers and across our climate sources.
And certainly good fodder going forward, I think, for more reporting on climate science and climate change. Angela, I want to thank you and, of course, Jason Salmonow for your hospitality during my visit to the Post last spring.
Absolutely.
Pleasure to meet you in person.
Absolutely.
And thanks so much for sharing your perspective with us today. Say hi to Jason and keep up the good work.
I will do that. Be well, Paul.
That's Angela Fritz from the Capital Weather Gang and the Washington Post. And coming up after the news, ClimateCast continues with a documentary from our partners at the BBC World Service about whether the world can truly come together to curb the rise in global temperatures.